Hi, friend, and welcome to The Idea of Us, a podcast that highlights good by interviewing great minds and learning best practices. We discuss the big questions here: what and who is us, what is good, and how much good is good. Also, what does it mean if we truly care for each other? In this episode, I have the honor to speak to Ariana van der Plas about the topic homelessness. Ariana is a multi-talented and faceted person. She's an engineer, a yoga teacher, a leadership coach, and the co-founder of the Women's Hub, a safe space for women to build community, grow, develop, and support each other. And the digital session of the Women's Hub is also where Ariana and I met and connected over LinkedIn, where I saw that she was working in the impact space, and I learned more about the project Stories Behind the Fog, which is a project where she, together with other change makers, shares stories about people that don't have a home in San Francisco. Their mission is to humanize homelessness one story at a time. And I am so excited that she agreed to share all her insights, experience, and her perspective in today's show about a difficult topic, but that needs to be addressed and solved. So in this episode of the Idea of Us podcast, you will learn more about Ariana's inspiring story and the topic homelessness. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Thank you so much, Ariana. I think I said it wrong now, but I'm so happy to have you here. This is the episode where we're going to talk about the homelessness in San Francisco. And yes, I'm so happy to have you here today. So welcome to it.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited that I get to talk about this important topic.
Yes. So I want to start with talking a little bit how we know each other, how we started to know each other, which was I was at a Women's Hub Love session where you are also the co-founder of. And a friend of mine, which is Ruta, talked about that she is the role model that she wished she had. And so we connected over LinkedIn, which I thought was so sweet of you, because that was such a touching moment just to see like all of us women connecting on so many deeper levels. So, and then I saw your profile and said, okay, she's also in the impact space, which I thought, okay, we speak the same love language, so I have to reach out and get you to the Idea of Us. So again, thank you so much for being here today and sharing all the wealth of knowledge that you have. Yes. So I would like to start introducing you. So you are originally from the Netherlands. You lived in San Francisco also. You are a woman of many talents. You're a leadership coach right now. You are a trained yoga and meditation teacher. You're co-founder of the Women's Hub, and you're a TED speaker. So someone who brings on so many talents, I would like to know from you what you think are the three words that define you and how you live your life.
That is such a beautiful introduction. Thank you so much. And I just quickly want to add that the love session, the Women's Hub love session that we met in with Ruta, I loved it so much. That one was in German, but we decided to do another session with Ruta in English on May 19th because she has so much wisdom to share. So just wanted to share that as well. And what three words define how I live? I tried not to make a whole study of it, but to see what words came up for me first. And I think the first word that came up for me, and that's also really relevant in terms of what we're talking about today, is connectedness. Mm-hmm. This sense that we human beings are all connected, that we're part of a planet, that we're part of an ecosystem together. And that for me, so that also is the reason why I started connecting with homeless people when I moved to San Francisco, but we'll talk about that later. But it's always been sort of a red thread in my life to build bridges between different groups of people, because that seems so at the core of what we need in the world. Yeah. Talking about the impact space, I think that's the type of impact that I want to have in the world. The other thing that kind of goes hand in hand with that is authenticity. So this idea of really showing up fully as who you are. We're so trained by society to have all these shiny versions, like sort of the Instagram version of our life, and to pretend that all is well. And I really believe that there's so much more possible if you show up authentically, that the connections you will have, and that's also what we see with our work with the Women's Hub, the connections you'll have with others are so much deeper, and your understanding of others will be so much deeper if you show up the way you are. So that's been really a sort of guiding principle in my life. And then the third thing, and this is also why I became a coach partly, is that for me, learning, growing, being curious is really guiding. I notice I get sort of this nervous energy when I feel like I'm in a stagnant place, when I'm not learning something new. So that's why I always, you know, I'm reading a lot. I'm curious to meet people that have a very different background from me. So that's the area where I'm always pushing myself in a way.
I love it. And again, Women's Hub, like that, what you're doing there is fantastic. Like, it's such a beautiful safe space for women. So everyone that all of us needed in our lives. So thank you so much again for doing this also. And yeah, and what I love how you said authentically showing up. That is so important. I think we struggle so much we lose somehow when we grow up to be authentic. And it's so important to go back to actually who you are, because I think that's really closely connected to happiness. So I want to know from you, can you describe two moments that inspired you or motivated you?
Yeah, when you're talking about authenticity that way, one moment that's really important for me, and that is that I actually, in my first job, I was applying for a leadership program within the company. It was a big company. And I had to do some assessments, and I scored a 1 out of 5 on authenticity. So, and that is not pretty, right? That means that basically people are telling you most of the time, I think you're playing a role. Mm-hmm. And that really struck a chord in me, because it made me realize that I had been basically trying to be successful according to the definitions of society or what I thought was expected of me, rather than connecting to what's important for me and how I want to live my life. And I think, honestly, a 1 out of 5 was a bit brutal.
Yes.
On the other hand, it was a big wake-up call for me, that realizing, like, hey, I don't want to live a life where at least people perceive me as being so inauthentic. So that was for me the starting point to do a lot of yoga and meditation to really learn how to connect with my body, because so far I've been living a lot from my brain. I'm pretty smart, so I got really far with that. And then I realized, like, hey, I'm not a walking brain. There's so much more to me. So let's see what's there. And that's been incredibly helpful for me. That also, I started working with a coach because of that, and that got me on the path of coaching. So that really, even though that moment was so painful, it really triggered a lot of really important things in my life. And well, another big moment, of course, was moving to San Francisco and seeing the homeless there, but we'll talk about that a lot later. But another moment that comes up for me as a pivotal or inspiring moment was also, so in early 2020, I moved to Zurich. So from San Francisco to Zurich. So this was the second time in my life that I moved to a new country. And what I learned from moving to San Francisco is to have a really open mind and to show up in that country and see what you're called to do. Mm-hmm. And what was so clear for me from the moment I set foot in Zurich in Switzerland was, like, this is a very masculine country, extremely masculine. There are areas here where women got voting rights in 1991.
Really? I can't imagine.
No, it's quite extreme. And so realizing that, and also talking to other expat moms, I'm a mom of 2 kids, so I connected with a lot of moms, also showed me how restricted women felt here. And it felt like either I have to fit into this masculine structure that doesn't work for me, or, you know, I'm on my own, basically. There's no way for me to be a mom and to have a career here. So that really hurt me. And then I met the founders of the Women's Hub in Germany, where it originated. And I was like, this is what I need to do. This is my quest here, basically. Just as homelessness was a big part of my quest in San Francisco, I noticed, like, this feminine leadership, this mm-hmm. empowering women is what I have to do here. And this is a big thing to say for me, because when I was in the Netherlands, which is where I lived most of my life, I would never join women's networks. I hated it. It's like this, I'm not going to join like this group of women complaining about how men don't treat them well, la, la, la. Here I was all of a sudden finding myself committed to create a safe space for women and do that in a way where we remember our sisterhood and remember how good it is to be connecting with other women, sharing stories. And so I noticed that I had to overcome my assumptions about what it means to be together as women. And I'm really glad I did.
Yes, absolutely. And I love what you shared about first, like about, you know, the rating with authenticity. Like being authentic and like what it did to you. And I think all of us, like so many people on this planet, struggle with the same issue, and specifically women. I would say that we believe we have to be a certain way to be successful, to be liked or whatever. And I love the work that you're doing on like in terms of leadership and in terms of the Women's Hub, because we don't have to, you know, you can be you and successful. So thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so aligned, super excited. And then what I want, like, so you said you now, like, you had experience in the Switzerland right now, but let's go, like, back to San Francisco. We both had the same experience because we both basically changed places and moved to San Francisco, and we both had experiences there. And I would love to know how your first experience was when you, like, came to San Francisco and like saw with your own eyes the homelessness crisis, and like where was it? Maybe you can share about it and how it made you feel.
Yeah, sure. So I came to San Francisco for the first time, I think in 2005 or six or so, and then I was there as a tourist, and I was like, this place is amazing, I love it, but I only saw the tourist places. Mm-hmm. And then in 2012, I would say something like that, my now husband, then boyfriend, did an internship in San Francisco, and he had an apartment close to the BART station on Mission and 16th. Mm. So I came from the airport, took BART, felt like so independent woman doing my thing, you know, finding my way in this new city. And then I came out of the BART station, and then the first thing you see is a lot of homeless people. Mm. And it's not the type of homelessness you see in European cities or in Western European cities. Mm. It's people dealing with mental illness, not getting medication. It's people struggling with addiction, shooting up at noon, you know, in the sunlight. It's human suffering that you see on that little street corner. And, you know, here I was happily visiting my boyfriend and thinking of San Francisco as a place where, you know, you have all these cool tech startups and big companies and you have so much yoga and all that. And then seeing that there's such a dark side to this city that I really didn't expect there to be. So it made me feel scared. It made me feel uncomfortable, angry. Yeah, all of such a mix of mostly negative emotions, for sure. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's, I think a lot of people coming to San Francisco, like specifically if you grow up in everywhere else, basically on this planet besides the US, you have like a picture of it. Like we have Hollywood movies that we've been watching since we're kids. And even though you haven't been in those cities, you have like a view of it, right? So I had a similar experience when I landed in San Francisco. Like I love the whole tech atmosphere and everything. And when I saw the homelessness crisis, I was shocked. Not that I have not seen it I mean, I grew up in Frankfurt. We have an issue here with that also. But I think the extent in San Francisco was for me just so, so big. It was so at the forefront of what you're seeing. So I was super curious about like how it was for you to like land there and just, and then see it and then just see like those two different, how do you say it? Just two different aspects that city has, like the beautiful nature, you know, the amazing like access to like healthy food and beaches and hiking and waterfalls, and then also, you know, the tech environment there, which is which you don't see on this planet again like this. And then on the other hand, also the homelessness crisis, which is quite shocking. And I felt the same way. So I didn't know what to do. So I just wanted to know like how it was for you. But thank you so much for sharing this. And then I read that you made that your home in a way, and you started sharing yoga classes for underprivileged people in the community. And can you tell us a little bit more about it? Like, how was it experienced? How was the responses, and how did it came to that point?
Yeah, so about a year or 2 years, yeah, I think 2 years after my husband did his internship in San Francisco, he said, like, I really want to live in San Francisco for a while. And for me, I never thought of myself as someone who would live abroad, but San Francisco was just a really appealing place to me for that combination of tech and yoga and spirituality. I think that's quite unique. And nature, I'm a big nature lover too. So that was all good reasons to spend some time there. And then, so I had this image of like, you know, I'm going there without an agenda, but probably I'll work at some tech company. Mm-hmm. And then, but when we were actually living there and we started hanging out with a lot of tech people, and I really felt uncomfortable about being in that, but really that tech bubble that exists in the Bay Area. And so I said I moved to San Francisco without an agenda. That's not fully true. The only thing that wasn't in my agenda was a yoga teacher training. Okay. Because I love yoga, and it's like, this is the place to deepen my yoga practice. So here I was with my yoga teacher training and this sense of, I cannot say I've lived in San Francisco and then ignore that there are 10,000 people living on the street and pretend that that doesn't exist. That just doesn't sit well with me. So I tried to find ways for connecting with these people on the street in a safe way, because honestly, it is scary to see people that are really struggling so much, that are shooting up drugs. It's not like you're casually going to have a conversation with some people. Mm-hmm. So I started out with volunteering in a soup kitchen, just handing out lunch as a really great way to, you know, to talk to people. That was at the Curry Senior Center in the Tenderloin. It's a really lovely place. And because I was going to the Tenderloin every week and, you know, getting to know some people, I heard about a place called the Healing Well. And the Healing Well is also a place in the Tenderloin where they offer all sorts of wellness classes for the neighborhood. And so they have yoga, they have Tai Chi, they have poetry, art, 12 steps groups, like all those kind of things. And they were looking for yoga meditation teachers. And so I had my yoga teacher training, but I wasn't planning to become a yoga teacher because San Francisco has enough yoga teachers. But then I was like, if I can use all the things I've learned in yoga and I've learned in meditation and apply that to people that are under such constant stress, like, that feels like a good use of my training. So I started teaching both yoga and meditation at the Healing Well and connected with the people there. We got some regular students coming in, and I saw how good it was for them to even just to be in a room and feel safe with other people and to feel so welcome. I think that was what was really unique about the healing, or is still really unique about the Healing Well, is that I've never felt as welcome anywhere as there. Wow. It was such a mix of people, and the thing that they shared and that brought them together was that they were interested in wellness and what it could do for them. And so I really loved being part of that community and using my yoga there and seeing people every week coming back saying like, oh, hey, that thing that we did with the breathing exercise really helped me, you know, deal with whatever happened. But also seeing their ups and downs, like you would see someone come in 1 week and seeing like they were doing really well, and the next week you could hardly communicate with them because they didn't get their medication or, you know, whatever happened. So also seeing the hardship of these humans living a very unstable life. Yeah. So it's a bit of the experience of my first steps in the Tenderloin, basically.
Yes. Beautiful, though. It sounds so nice what you said, like you never felt as much welcomed there as you felt somewhere else. So I really love that. I wanted to, would you say was that the inspiration for, because today we're also speaking like about your fantastic project, which is Behind the Fog. And was that the inspiration for these stories behind the fog? Was that like when, how did it came alive? Maybe you can tell a little bit our listeners what it is.
Yeah. So what happened is, you know, here I was, this fancy expat woman hanging out with homeless people. And so a lot of people were curious about my experience. There were so many people that were working in the tech industry that were also curious, like, what's going on? What are the stories of these people? So I would just share the conversations I had over lunch at the Curry Senior Center, or, you know, funny stories of what happened during my yoga classes. Like, people would regularly fall asleep and snore really loud, for example. They're exhausted, right? So having a safe place, yes, a peaceful place. Yeah, of course you fall asleep during, like, there's no ego in teaching yoga in the Tenderloin. But so I also love writing. So I started just writing my own blog on Medium. About like the conversations I had, my awkwardness, the mistakes I made. Mm. Because mind you, I'm trained as an engineer. I'm not a social worker. Mm. So, so for me, it was quite a big step to step into this world and to see, like, how do I, being so aware of all this privilege, how do I relate to people that live such a different life? So I started writing about that. And then the people that started Stories Behind the Fog, the project that we want to talk about today too, they found me. They said, like, hey, we're actually doing the same, because they had a big mission of collecting 100 stories of homeless people and taking really beautiful pictures of them to really, yeah, to rehumanize what is going on, to remind us that these are human beings. We call them the homeless, which makes it a sort of amorphous group. But these are human beings with really interesting life stories, with big talents that we're missing out on. So that's really where I and the founders of Stories Behind the Fog found each other. And I was immediately like, yeah, of course I'm going to join your mission. Mm-hmm. And I love that you're dreaming so big of saying, like, we're going to collect 100 stories. We're going to turn them into a book. Yes. The world needs to know these people. So, yeah. I was like, okay, I'm all in. So we got this wild collective of artists, of photographers, of writers that were collecting these stories. We've been collaborating with about 10 outreach organizations, because they would introduce us to the people that we've been interviewing for both our safety and for the safety of the interviewees, that they know, like, sharing your story is such a vulnerable thing. So knowing that they could do that at the Healing Well, for example, I interviewed quite a few of my yoga students there, really helped us build a trust and connection to share that story and to take their pictures, and for them to be seen and witnessed was such a big thing. They go, you imagine that you're homeless. You'll go through many days without being acknowledged, without anyone even looking in your eyes. So for them to have someone sit down with them for hours and listen to their life stories is wild. Yeah, so that's been a journey for us and for the interviewees. And right now we have the 100 stories, and most of them are published on the website, and we're now turning them into a beautiful coffee table book with a designer in Spain. So it's in the making, but it's been a journey of years.
I can imagine. And I can't wait to see the book. I went to the stories, and it is, first of all, I love the mission. Like, I heard in your TED Talk where you said the mission is to humanize homelessness one story at a time. So it is, that's exactly like, with that project, what I love about it, you're building a bridge to a world that we maybe close our eyes to a lot of times, right? And then we say, okay, we're two different, as you said, two different sets or parts of a community, which is not the case. We're one community at the end of the day. So from all those stories that you learned, what was the one story that impacted you the most?
I would say the one story that impacted me the most was with Cherry. She was one of the first women I interviewed, and I met her at an event about homelessness, and I was sitting next to her, and she was like saying, yes, yes, when the speaker was speaking. And so I said after the talk, like, wow, you seem really involved in this topic. And then she told me, like, yeah, well, I'm homeless myself. So here I was sitting next to this homeless woman who took the time to go to an event about homelessness. Well, she didn't know where she was going to sleep that night. And then so we connected, we really had a lovely conversation. And then I invited her to an interview the next week. And then she told me she had been in prison for 23 years for conspiracy for murder.
Oh, yeah, I read that one.
And so imagine, and then here I am sitting with all my assumptions about people that have been in prison for conspiracy for murder, whereas I got to know her as this really gentle woman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I looked up her police report, and it was horrible. It was, you know, a group of people molesting a child molester, and she was part of that community that did that. So it was really a terrible story. And here I was feeling such a connection with this woman where she is now. And then she told me that prison was really for her a moment to do introspection and to see mm-hmm. what she wanted to be in life. And she started sister groups in the prison to help younger women. And now that she got out of prison, she was helping. She had this dream of setting up an organization for younger women to prevent that they would go into a similar path as she had. And all the while she was struggling with finding a home, finding a job and all these things. So I think that was for me in terms of, you know, my value of learning. There was so much learning and so much confusion for me. And like part of my brain was like, people who were part of a group that murdered another person are evil. And I'm sitting here with this radiant woman whose only mission now is to help out others. Mm. And so to sit with that for yourself and to sit with that confusion was really helpful for me to see, like, it's not as black and white as we make things.
Yes.
This can happen in one human life. And I've been in touch with her for quite a few years after that, and seeing her getting a job and like getting some more stability. But then, you know, sometimes still getting boyfriends that were not good for her, and just seeing how these patterns are yes. still part of life. Yeah, but I think it's always torture, this question of which story, yes. you know, has the most impact. This is really one that will stay with me for a long time.
Yes. Wow. That's an impressive story. Also from the perspective, like forgiving and forgiveness in our community. Like I loved that you were like that we have like misconceptions about things that we like stigmatize very quickly. So thank you for sharing that story. And in that regard also, what would you say, like how did your perspective change through those experiences that you made within your project, and also afterwards, as you said, you're still connected to everyone.
No, I'm not connected to everyone, but definitely to a few people. Yeah. I think what I said earlier about when we talk about the homeless and it feels like this amorphous blob, that just a diversity of experiences and reasons that people become homeless and backgrounds. Like I've talked to people that were firefighters, mm-hmm. Teachers, artists, you know, mm-hmm. all these different poets, scientists, like all these different backgrounds and just all these different experiences of what it means to not have a home. So I think that was a big or an important learning for me to see, like, oh, this is, you cannot talk about the homeless. Yes. There's a range. And this is also what makes it hard to solve the homelessness problem. It's like mm-hmm. you're talking about such a wide range of experiences and ages and backgrounds, that's really hard. And yeah, what else changed in my perspective? I think on one hand that we have so much in common, like in terms of our values or the things we strive for, there's so much that we have in common. And it made me even more aware of the privilege I have, specifically for the fact that I come from a family that is very stable.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a really loving, my parents are still together. They love each other. They love me and my sister. And just that foundation, having that and having that example of this is what a loving relationship looks like. This is what you know, mm-hmm. healthy adults look like. that I have self-esteem. I didn't have to fight for that. I just have that because they gave me that. being aware of how that changes everything, because 100% of the people I interviewed didn't come from a stable family background. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they didn't know who their father was. There was a lot of fighting. There was abuse in their family. Mm-hmm. There was drugs, all of that. So that's where 100% of the people I interviewed grew up in. Mm-hmm. And that is such a different starting point than my safe, cozy family.
Yes.
And that's it made me appreciate what my parents did for me more, and also feel my responsibility as a parent. While I was doing the interviews, I was pregnant, had a baby, then was pregnant, had another baby. So it was really part of my journey as a mother. And then realizing that's what motherhood is. It's like setting that foundation for a kid. And especially in the first few years, that changes everything. And we did an interview. Luckily, I didn't do the interview. I knew that would be too hard for me. But we did an interview with a young mom that was homeless. Mm-hmm. And but I did write the story, and I did make the transcription of the story. And then realizing, like, oh, that could have been, you know, the start of my kid's life. That's like, it's even hard for me to say it out loud now, that that's the reality.
Yeah. Yeah, I can. It's interesting to know, like, how you say that parents and their environment obviously had like so much impact on it. And I think as a mother also, it's beautiful to see that, you know, you can like that it touches you on a different. And like a question that I always have when I think about being homeless is it like, because we all quickly say, okay, it's someone else's issue, it's not my issue, and it cannot happen to me. But actually, can homelessness happen to anyone, or is it like, what is your opinion in that regard?
I think the popular opinion is saying, yes, it can happen to everyone. Mm-hmm. And I think theoretically that's true. But I do think, referring back to what I just said about where did you grow up? What did you see around you? That can have a huge influence on the likelihood of you becoming homeless. And I think also, you know, where in the world do you grow up? I think in the Netherlands, yes, you can become homeless, but it will probably not look like homelessness in San Francisco. Because what I heard in so many stories, it's this cascade of things that happen. So your marriage falls apart. And because of that, your tendency towards addiction becomes an actual addiction. And because of that, you lose your job. And because of that, you lose your home. And so it's this cascade of things that happen. Mm-hmm. And of course, something like that can happen to everyone. But some people will have more safety nets than others. Mm-hmm. So that's why I want to emphasize the likelihood aspect of the question. It's like, it's not... sure, it could happen, but if you don't come from a stable family, if you have a tendency towards addiction, if there's mental illnesses in your family history, if what I saw a lot in San Francisco and compared to, you know, the Dutch are very risk averse.
Yes.
In San Francisco, I saw so many people having huge debts and like no savings.
Yes.
Another risk. It's so much easier to lose your job in the US compared to the Netherlands. So there, you know, that's another safety net that, you know, I've learned, because that's the standard in my culture, that I have a certain amount of savings in my bank and you know, stuff like that. So there, it's a combination of those factors, I think, that
I grew up in Germany. So I grew up in Europe. So for me, what you're saying is, I can understand totally, like, risk averse is something that I grew up as well. And debt is definitely an issue. But what I also like is, and it's a tough question, you know, to ask if it can happen to anyone. And I think we simplify it also with, you know, like, can it happen to anyone? So I loved your response, because we have to be also aware of our privileges and not judge someone too quickly. Because if I had access to all those things, the likelihood might be smaller, right? But it can still happen. So I like how you pointed that also out, to for us to be aware and not to judge someone really quickly. Because one experience that I had when I was in San Francisco, and I asked native San Francisco people, which are not that many anymore, what they think about, what I think about the homelessness crisis. And one said to me, it's a choice. Yeah. And that is even tougher than it can happen to anyone. So what would you say to that statement that homelessness is a choice? I mean, you already touched on it, but maybe we can talk about that also.
Homelessness is a choice for some people. We have interviewed people for whom it was a choice. They didn't want to be part of regular society, mm-hmm. or they just wanted the freedom of, like, there's a really lovely story of a guy who has this beautiful bike and that's basically his home and that's all he needs. So there is that. But I would say that, and again, this is based on my experience, that most of the people did not want to be homeless. This was not a choice for them. This was a result of things that happened to them and how they dealt with that. That is another thing that some of them would say, is that I screwed up. That's not all of them, but there are a few that said, like, I didn't have my priorities straight. I screwed up. So that's as close as I would go to it was a choice. Like, there were two that said it was a choice, and there were some that said I made really big mistakes. And there were a lot that were like, I was just overwhelmed by circumstances, and then my addiction hit me, or then my mental illness hit me, or whatever. Yeah.
And would you say, okay, so are there other misconceptions about homelessness, like, that you noticed when you, or that you know about, that you would like to share with us?
I think there's a misconception that homeless people are lazy. So that they're homeless and they're just going from, like, one meal, like, their breakfast that they can get there to their meal, lunch meal somewhere else. And that's how they choose to move through life. Whereas in reality, what often happens is that it's super overwhelming to have to live this life of uncertainty. And often they're just a few forms away from getting back into the system, at least getting a case manager, getting someone to help them. But even filling out these forms is too overwhelming for them, because there's so much else happening. They're under constant stress. I interviewed quite a few women living on the streets. So there's this real risk of them being harassed while sleeping, right? So imagine living a life where even sleep is not a safe place for you, and then having to deal with, well, I even have anxiety for forms in the US, like, honestly. Yeah. I moved to Switzerland a year ago, and here I can actually call the tax authorities and be like, hey, I don't understand the form. What am I supposed to do? And they help you. And I'm still, like, sort of recovering from form anxiety in the US. So imagine having a super stressful life, maybe addiction, maybe mental illness, and then doing these things that you need to do to get back into the system. That's just a lot on someone's plate. So that's not laziness, I would say. But it is, sure, and again, sure, there are some of them very lazy, but I would say for the majority that is not the cause of them not getting back into the system.
Excellent point. And forms, I think everywhere on this planet are annoying. So for everyone, it's just some places have more information, and I had the same experience. So one thing that I wanted, like a personal thing that I wanted to ask you. So if I, like, now I'm in Frankfurt, and then we have this issue here also, and in San Francisco it's the same. So the more homeless people I see, the numb I get to that cause, to that issue. And I was just wondering, what can I do about it? Like, or if you notice that other people had the same experiences, like, if you, like, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So this numbness that you're experiencing is a survival mechanism. That's how I see it. Because imagine every time you see someone suffering, because that's your perception, or you feel the threat, you feel threatened by someone acting weird. You would be under such high constant stress. Like, I once counted how many homeless people I saw from my walk from home to the daycare of my daughter, and it was 30 homeless people.
Wow.
Not in a good state. Like, yes. You know, the encampments, people shooting up at 8 a.m. in the morning, like, all of that happening. In a 15-minute walk to the daycare. Imagine if I would let all of that into my system. Like, that would ruin my whole day. And so that numbing, and how you sometimes literally see people step over a person who's passed out on the street just to get to BART, that's your survival mechanism hitting in. And I think that's just a super natural, it's not a beautiful reaction, but it's just what you do to survive this reality. And that's also something I had to learn, because when you start engaging with these people, when I started working at the Curry Senior Center, handing out lunch, you know, you start building a relationship with these people, and all you want to do is like take them home and get them a nice shower and whatever. And you can, you know that you can. So that's something you have to accept, is that you have to accept that other people, that people suffer. It's going to get really Buddhism all of a sudden, but people suffer.
Yes.
And you can either kind of numb yourself, or you can accept that reality, or you can try and save everyone. Mm. Which is, yeah.
Yeah.
Or something.
It's a dilemma, right? So it's a dilemma, like as you said, like, yeah, accepting that people suffer is a big thing. And then you can do something about it, as you said, right? That is, so there's the other question that I had is, would you then say, I mean, we have to accept, when we talk about acceptance, is then homelessness simply a part of society that we, like, that's how it would be in any case? Or is it a problem that we need to, do we need to solve here? Like, and yeah.
Yeah, so yes, we need to solve this.
Okay.
And my American friends always made fun of me because, you know, they see the Netherlands as sort of a what do you call it? A socialist country almost, where people are just unemployed and they get money anyway, and, you know, their healthcare for everyone. And so, they were really joking, like, you're a socialist, like, what do you know? And in that way, I am a socialist. I really believe that as a society, we have a responsibility to make sure that at the very least, people have access to medication. Mm. Like, we're talking about a very rich city here. How come that there are people on the streets that do not get their medication for mental health? Progressive things as safe injection sites. That's been happening in Europe for quite a while now. That was really new in San Francisco to do that. Housing prices. I mean, come on. You see all these new housing projects and it's all fancy apartment for the tech hipsters. Mm. I get that. That's where the money is. But if you want a city that's livable, you really, really need to think about how to make it achievable that there is affordable. And I mean, really affordable, not like 2,000 a month affordable, but affordable.
Yes.
Apartments. So yeah, I do. So I think in San Francisco, there's a tendency to say like, we cannot solve this. And I'm like, so how come it's so different in Europe? Mm-hmm. Like we have bad situations, but not this bad, and not in a city that is so rich.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think it's a matter of priorities. It's also a matter of how you think about this issue. Like I saw so often when I was in the Tenderloin, there was like police telling people to move their tents. And I'm like, what are you solving here?
Mm.
Now these people are stressed. They have to find a new place to live. They're going to put their tents in another neighborhood. Like,
yes.
What exactly did you solve just now? And it's really important that we start seeing this as a health crisis, as a thing where we just need to take better care of people, because we're missing out on talent. Mm. We're missing out on what I just said, the scientist, the designer that I talked to, the teachers. I've talked to quite a few teachers that became homeless. We're missing out on this talent because we treat them as criminals.
Yes. That is, it's so beautiful to get your insights, because as I said, when I'm in San Francisco, like, I also think the same thing, because I think there's so much wealth there, you know, all tech companies, there's so many, I mean, the rent prices also indicate like how much people can pay, you know, and which is like different. And then also if you grow up in Europe, yeah, social, like we are a bit more socialist for sure, or socialist, like our the way we go about community in our markets are a little bit more humane for me in that regard, and still people think there that it means like everyone is going to be living, being unemployed, and abusing the system, which is not the case. So thank you for sharing this. And then another thing that I wanted to say, so from the podcast is about, so the main foundation of the podcast is Ubuntu. Ubuntu is a South African philosophy where it's about like, if everyone cares for each other, then we all are cared of technically. And I would like to know what you think is, what can community do? Also, you spoke at the beginning about human connectedness, right? So we all connected. What can we do maybe in one thing that you, like one example that you have that we, where we can help or solve or care?
Yeah. So I asked this question many times because I also wanted to know. And what often came up is that the people that are without a home, they do live somewhere and they would like to be treated as neighbors. Mm-hmm. And I love that idea of neighbors because it means with your neighbors, you're not best friends. Like you don't need to invite them to every birthday party, but you just kind of have this rapport. You greet each other, you acknowledge them. You know, maybe sometimes you bring them flowers or whatever. But there's just this sort of, there is this connection, but you also have your boundaries. And I think that another topic that often comes up is that people wonder if they should give homeless people money. Mm. That is really up to you. Like if you don't feel good about that, if that's crossing your boundaries, don't do that. But if you can just, I wouldn't say think of them as normal human beings. They are normal human beings. But if you can see them as your neighbors and just be like, hey, good morning. Because often you have these regulars that you see on your way to work or whatever. Mm-hmm. That is already a really big thing. And another thing is there are a number of beautiful organizations in San Francisco that you can support. Like I'm also not a fan of giving money directly. I did sometimes, you know, buy people food or something. But giving money to these organizations like the Healing Well or the Cree Senior Center, or all of these other organizations, is a really good way of being supportive and contributing in a way that aligns with your personal values.
Mm, thank you so much. That is some good advice. So it's good to know that, yes, it's a problem we need to solve here, and we can solve in as a community in different ways. I loved also what you said in your TED talk where you said, like, just look what you can do. Like, what is it that you can do and then contribute? And so now we're going slowly towards the end of this podcast. And as you are a leadership coach, I would love to know what inspired you to become one. What is your approach? What makes a good leader? And we connect that to homelessness, which attributes do our political leaders need to support a homeless part of the community? So a bunch of questions.
All right. I'm going to try and make a coherent story out of that one. So what inspired me to become a coach is the work I did with my coach back in the days when I got a 1 out of 5 for authenticity. And for me to see what my coach did for me in terms of connecting me with who I am, the impact I want to have in the world, the impact I have on other people, and how to be with that was like so life changing for me that I was like, wow, I thought he was a magician. I really thought this guy was a magician. Like he was reading my emotions and telling me like how to make space for that. I was like, wow. People can do that. And then when I moved to San Francisco, I decided to do a leadership coaching training there. And then I was like, I just became the musician. I can do this. And so sometimes people are intimidated by that. I call it leadership coaching. I really see leadership as something that we all are. We are all leaders in our own environment in the sense that we can take responsibility for the impact that we all have. And I see doing your own personal development work as really central to leadership in whatever shape or form. So understand who you are, what's important to you, what triggers you, what fears do you have? Are these fears real or not? I think there's a lot of fear-based politics happening right now. And that's what really worries me because you know, here I am, the little bridge builder, seeing people build walls instead of bridges. Like, that hurts my soul to see that. So I think I would want for all politicians to, you know, work with a coach to see, to work on their fears and to work also on their strength and to and on their dreams and to trust it, to believe that they can create those dreams instead of poking into other people's fear. That I feel that's really the disease of our time, and that's creating really a polarity that we don't want. And the talking about connectedness, like that's really what we need. We are as humans, we are judgment machines. We walk through the world judging and making assumptions. And if nobody ever reflects back on us that that's what we do, we create our own reality. And that's what you know, that's basically what's happening in the social media bubbles, is that we just hear our beliefs and there's nobody poking in those beliefs and making us curious about the other bubbles out there. And I think for, you know, if we want to, I want to go as far as if we want to survive as, you know, a species, we need to stop thinking in these differences and stop acting out of fear for things that are not to be feared. There are things that are dangerous. There are also a lot of things that we make dangerous.
I couldn't agree more. 100%. So connectedness, being united and not fearing our differences. And if someone is interested in leadership coaching, can you just like say before we go to the final questions how they can reach out to you? And
Yeah, so I have the blessing of a really unique name. So I'm the proud owner of Arianna.com and of Arianna@Arianna.com if you want to send me an email. I offer free simple coaching sessions for people that are curious about what coaching is and what it can do for them, because 30% of the effectiveness of coaching is based on the relationship and the trust between the coach and the coachee. So I find it super important that people really can connect with me before they commit to a coaching journey. I just launched a new coaching program for women leaders that is on my website that you can find. I started about half a year ago. I started on Instagram, so you can see a lot of my work there if you look for Arianna van der Plas. Yeah, I think that's it. Memory of where to find me.
Nice. Thank you for sharing that. So our final questions that I always ask in this podcast is, what is the kindest thing someone has ever done for you?
One thing that comes to mind as a recent thing that meant the world to me is that both my parents and my parents-in-law came to us in Switzerland, because the story is we moved to Switzerland to be closer to our family, and then the pandemic hit, and, you know, it made the Netherlands feel further away than ever. And right now the situation is, if you want to come to Switzerland, you need to be in quarantine for 7 to 10 days. So both of them did that because they wanted to support us so that my husband and I could get some time together, which we haven't had in a while, and to be with their grandchildren. And that to me was such a gift. And like, you probably got from my story, family is so important for me. So that's, that was huge for me.
Yes. And I think everyone on this planet, right, is missing right now, is missing their loved ones. And that means a lot for sure. And what do you want to be remembered for?
I think that what was also the central theme of our conversation, but that I want to be a bridge builder in different shapes and forms depending on where I am, and I want people to feel the power of being authentic and connecting authentically with others. So if I can create that for people, an environment where, like the Women's Hub, where they feel safe enough to connect on that deep level, where I can coach people in a way where they can become leaders that foster that in their own environment. I'd be really proud.
Nice. And so the last two questions are, if you could change one thing on this planet, what would it be and why? And what is your idea of us?
I'm afraid I'm going to repeat myself a little bit. It really goes back to that idea of approaching others with curiosity, looking for where there are connections, testing your assumptions of the fear that you feel towards people that seem different are real. Like if there's one thing that I could change on this planet is like that people would instantly have this sense of interconnectedness, interdependence that I think is our reality and that I think we need to live by more. And what's your idea of us? I think that's in a similar sense that I almost get this image of, you know, we all have this outside appearance, but there's a core of us that is so similar and so connected that it's like it's almost like peeling the layers of the onion, and then you come to the us that all looks pretty similar, and where that's where the magic of true connection also is.
Wow, I love this ending. that is so beautifully said. That is a beautiful definition of the idea of us, to be honest. If you feel us at the core, we are connected and more similar than apart. So I love it. I'm so grateful for you and your time today. You shared so much and gave us insight in something that I think a lot of us was, like, at least on me personally, I was like, it was an issue I was thinking about and I did not know where to start. And thank you so much for doing this. And thank you so much for sharing it today. I appreciate you a lot.
And thanks for giving me the space. It really means a lot to me to be able to share this experience because it was so important for me. So thanks for creating a stage for these stories.
This show was truly eye-opening and I loved every minute with Ariana. Her story is truly inspiring, and I love how wherever she goes on this planet, she looks for a way to contribute to society in her own authentic way. My favorite part was when she talked about the importance of family and structure in one's life, and how this also is a privilege that we should not take for granted and acknowledge. This part really resonated with me. Because when I think about homelessness, I also think about fault, and I catch myself of being judgmental, ignoring the fact that we all have different circumstances in life and pretending that if you're not struggling in any regard, it's solely based on one's own achievement, which is not true. My English teacher always used to say, and I truly hated that, Yerika, life is not fair. And although I hated the statement, this is true. Life is not fair. I believe deep in our hearts, we are aware of that. And since we are one community, whether we close our eyes, numb our feelings, we know human suffering exists. In terms of things we can solve, like I believe homelessness, we need to solve. There are many organizations doing the work here, trying to provide holistic solutions to a very, very complex problem. Because as we learned today, it's not just housing we're talking about. It's addiction, it's mental health, it's also cultural and geographical aspects that play a role. So solutions need to be very holistic and also preventive. For me personally, so basically, where can I start? I would love to start to make sure that everyone I met, no matter which circumstance the person is in, I treat with respect. In Ariana's word, like I would treat a neighbor. So I hope you enjoyed today's show of the Idea of Us podcast. Please make sure to reach out to Ariana. She's a beautiful human being. You can reach out to her over her IG handle, ArianaFandaPlus, or to her website, ariana.com. I also would love to connect with you, which you can do through my IG handle, which is theideaofus.pod. Yes, I'm forever grateful for you listening in today, and I wish you, as always, much love and light. Yadaka.